Hi, I'm David Zetland. I'm a water economist, and I'm here to give some additional comments on water economics for the Development Economics Unit at Marginal Revolution University. And I'm going to be talking about some ways to improve water policies to result in better outcomes for people. I want to talk about some big concepts here, some concepts that are important around the world as far as water economics and water policies are concerned, but a lot of these policies are more important still in developing countries where water management is not as good as we find in developed countries. The first thing that's important is that we need to keep in mind that water managers have choices. They work for monopolies. And most of the time, you get your water from a single supplier to your tap. If you're a farmer, you only get water from a single irrigation district. There are not necessarily markets or competition to provide water. What that means is that the monopoly managers have discretion on what they do. Now, of course, they're overseen by regulators and politicians, but those regulators and politicians are quite busy, and they don't know as much about how to do the job as the water managers do. They suffer from a problem of asymmetric information. And this means, in the end, that water managers are going to do good if they want to do good, or if they are capable of doing good, which is what we see in some places that are surprising, like Phnom Penh in Cambodia, where the water manager there has done a fantastic job of expanding water supply to the poorest people at reasonable prices. Or we see bad outcomes, which in my favorite example is in Las Vegas, where the water supply is more about building new houses and subdivisions than about building reliability for the people who live in Las Vegas. So the policy prescription that I want to bring up here is that around the world, you should judge water managers by the outcomes they bring, not necessarily about the words they pose. Secondly, I want to talk about a really important political and rhetorical battle about free water, water as a human right. It should be free. The results, this is a good idea, it sounds fantastic, but the problem is that it often results in water supply to the rich people, who are politically powerful, who have water service because they live in an area which is an older, more established area of a city, for example. But the poor people who live in the outskirts of cities, who live in slums, don't necessarily get water, because water managers have a weak incentive to give free water to poor people who may be willing to pay but are not paying. And extending service to those areas costs money. So the water managers who have very little money to begin with are not really interested in extending service to those poor areas. That's one problem, okay? The poor don't get water. But of course, the other problem is that the rich who do get water get it at a very cheap price or a free price. And they use a lot of water. And that means there's a harm to the environment because water has to come from somewhere. And the environmental water flows are often not priced. So what you have is a free water policy that results in rich people getting a lot of water, the poor people getting no water, and the environment being harmed. The other part that comes out of this is that those cheap prices require that the managers find money from somewhere to run the system. And they need essentially subsidies. Those subsidies will come from domestic political actors, or they'll come from international aid. And in both of those cases, the subsidies are going to come with strings attached. There's going to be political intervention, and the managers are going to be told to do this and that according to the needs of the donors, not necessarily the needs of the customers. So what we get from free water is essentially a problem in terms of bringing water to the people who need it. And we see an example of this with the Millennium Development Goal to bring water. It was originally defined to bring clean water to the poor people, but it ended up being redefined as access to an improved water source. And under that definition, a billion people still lack that around the world. And that means a water pipe within 200 meters or 600 feet of their house. And those people might have a water pipe that far away, but that pipe might not have water in it. And that goal has been redefined so that instead of having, it's been redefined. And what we have now is basically 3 billion people who lack access to clean water. But the bureaucratic goal has been reached for all but 1 billion. And now the bureaucrats are moving along, and there's not very much money around because they've spent the last 10 years reaching the wrong goal. So this is an example of probably the worst example of not bringing services to the poor that not only the poor need, but the poor are willing to pay for. And that's why it's okay to price water at a break-even cost, a full cost pricing is what it's called, or even a small profit, because the poor right now pay too much for water and they get sick from the water they buy from informal sources. Another important factor that's in the water business around the world is that it's too cheap. It's too cheap for a really interesting reason. If you run a business and you produce 10 units of a product for a dollar per unit, and then you produce another 10 units of the product for $2 a unit because you have increasing cost, which is typical, then you're going to be selling that cost, let's say, at least $2 a unit. You're going to sell it at the highest marginal cost or above, because it doesn't make much sense to produce the product for $2 and sell it for, say, $1.50. But in the water business, average cost pricing is what's used, and that means that you actually do sell that product for $1.50 a unit. You pay $2 to make it, you sell it for $1.50. You lose on every unit, essentially, or on those last 10 units. And what happens then is that not only is the business losing money in terms of money, finances, but also it's selling that water too cheap. And people are going to use more of it because it's too cheap. And that's bad enough. If that's not bad enough, then it's even worse, because most water pricing is based on the cost of delivery. It's not based on the actual value of water as a resource. So unlike the business called oil and gasoline, you might have a water price that is set based on delivery, but no water to deliver because that price is too low, and therefore you have empty pipes. Whereas in the oil and gasoline business, when you pay for at the pump to fill up your car, you're paying for the infrastructure, you're also paying for the resource, and that price goes up when oil is scarce or gasoline is scarce. In the water business, the price does not go up. It goes up very rarely when water is scarce, and people use too much of it, and that's why we have shortages. So my policy recommendation for water pricing is that we should raise the prices to reflect scarcity, and that will end shortages of water everywhere. A third factor that's really important in the water business is the use of other people's money. And by that, I mean that one group is going to pay for a project, a large infrastructure project, for example, and another group is going to benefit from that. Now, let's back up and talk about infrastructure projects. The main idea from economics is that we should build a project if the benefits of the project are greater than the costs. You know that when you decide to make a purchase in your own home, you want to buy a car or a phone or go out to a movie. If the movie is worth more to you than it costs, then you go and do it. In the water business, that's also true. But what happens is, of course, benefits or costs can be misstated. Of course, the value of water can be set to zero, which is a real problem. But the biggest problem, which is my middle bullet point, is that the benefits of the project often go to one group while the costs go to another group. And this is not good. This means that farmers, for example, will get access to water, and the taxpayers will pay for that project. So this is going to result in farmers using too much water because they're paying so little for it, and taxpayers getting the bill. So very simple idea. Project beneficiaries should pay their costs. This has not happened very often, but it should be happening in the water world. My thoughts on water economics. If you want more information, I suggest you read my blog, Aguanomics, or you read my book, The End of Abundance, where many of these examples come from. But I would really recommend, just for your own education, and it would be enlightening for both you and the water managers to have a conversation about how they manage your water and how they manage your money and what's going to happen in the future for your community. Thanks so much.